Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. We're here, episode 2. Bless You Boys is the SB Nation site devoted to Tigers baseball. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm a staff writer and editor at Bless You Boys, and with me is my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going?
Not too shabby. It's freezing as heck up here in Manitoba.
Oh, yeah, you guys are starting to get it, aren't you?
Yeah, it's unpleasant, and I can't explain it properly because we're in Celsius, but it's cold. I'm just going to go cold.
Yeah, it looks like it's finally heading our way as well. We kind of had like a reprieve the last couple days in Michigan. It was almost 50-ish a couple days, but yeah, we're doomed now. It's coming.
Yeah, it was super nice here for about a week, and now we've been teased long enough. Now winter is here.
Yeah, the winter meetings are coming. That's how we know. The days are
now
getting
shorter.
That's
the winter I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I know. Like, man, yeah, again, we talked about this last week, but it was like, yeah, years past, the winter meetings would be like, ooh, what big thing is going to happen? And now it's like, well, I hope they get someone decent in the Rule 5 draft, and maybe they can trade Ian Kinsler and make everyone very sad, but hopefully get something decent for him and give him a nice home to try to compete on.
Yeah, like, it's sad, but it's a foregone conclusion at this point. Like, there's no sense in keeping him. Like, what, so that he can be old man at the helm for a losing team?
Yeah, not just a losing team, but yeah, like, probably a really, really bad team.
Yeah, like, I was on the radio with ESPN, I guess it'll be yesterday by the time this airs, and we were talking about it, and it's like, it's going to be, like, a 100 loss team. Possibly for the next 2 years. So... I don't know that we want to subject Ian Kinsler to that.
Yeah.
Make him even grumpier.
I know. You know, he's only got a couple of years left where he's still going to be good and everything. So, yeah, it would be good if we can find him someplace good to go, and preferably, yeah, someplace that they have enough prospects that they're willing to let slip a good one, especially if we throw something
exactly.
in. So, yeah, we'll be hoping for that. One thing I was going to mention is that we're hoping next week we'll have David Lorilla, who's a writer for Fangraphs, and he's contributed to a bunch of different places, Baseball Digest, Sabre member, baseball follower extraordinaire. He'll be at the winter meetings, and we're going to hope to hook up with him there and have him on to talk about what he's seeing there, who's drinking with who, what shenanigans are going on. He probably can't reveal any of that, but we'll try to ask him anyway, and see what's going on there. So... we have that coming up next week, but for today, the Tigers did exciting. Well, all right, the Tigers did things. The Tigers did something.
Yeah, the definition of exciting might have to be stretched a little for us to call what they did today exciting. But let us talk about how I'm psychic.
Yes, you are psychic.
Just
because
a little bit.
Yeah, last week you brought up Leonis Martin as a guy that we, you know, kind of could have taken a look at earlier last year, and someone who just, you know, kind of went under the radar and no one picked him up because there seemed to be one of those quid pro quo agreements between general managers to just kind of let him be and let him stay with Seattle. But today the Tigers snatched him up for what, $1.75 million for next year. And I think there's
$1.75 million and like $1.1 million in incentives, I think.
Yeah. And I think
something like that.
And isn't there, I think there's an extra year of control as well. I missed if it was an option or not, because I just got out of work, but they've got him long enough where if he comes back and actually does something, you know, we'd be able to
deal. They have that option, yeah.
So the question is, how is it that you managed to mention him right there? That was incredible. You brought him up, and now we've got him.
Well,
we should try something.
We were
with
talking.
Shohei Ohtani.
We should. I think he's going to the Padres. Let's see if I'm right.
Yeah, it does seem like
Ohtani have come out as the
favorite all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think Ohtani's going to go to the the Padres. I think Kinsler's going to go to the Angels. I'm just going to say these now. We'll see how right or wrong I am. No, the Martin thing, who were we talking about? We were talking about that Phillies pitcher.
Oh, yeah,
and
Apple,
how
yeah.
nobody, yeah, about Apple, and how nobody signed him. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it reminds me of that Leonis Martin thing from last year where it seemed like he'd be a good fit for us, but we didn't take him. And lo and behold, only less than a year after the fact, we now have Leonis Martin in our outfield. So my question is, how do we figure he's going to get used? Do we think like everyday center field, or is it just going to be an all-around kind of outfield platoon with people changing positions?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that he's probably going to get the first crack at the center field job, especially against right-handed pitching. So maybe you kind of pair him with, Jacoby Jones, who really isn't, we'll see how things
Oh,
go, but, isn't really ready to play every day in center field, so.
no, I think they should leave Jacoby in Toledo for the most part this year. Just let him develop more.
Yeah, at least I kind of feel the same. Like at least in the early going, see if he can kind of get his feet under him and start making better contact. Because from what we saw, last year, he just doesn't look ready at all. Maybe leave him at AA or AAA, and yeah, see if he can kind of get his legs under him and start making better contact, and then maybe bring him up later in the year. So yeah, I tend to agree. I think Martin will probably be the starter, and at least play most of the time. There's
So do we
still
figure Martin for center, like Matuk and right? Or
not that
left, I
yeah
guess.
and left, and then I assume Nick Castellanos is gonna just they're just gonna turn him loose in right field and let him play there and see if he can kind of figure it out over the course of the year. I mean, we don't really have anything to lose, so
No, I think that's right. I think that he'll stick in right where he can do the least amount of damage. I'm so sorry to Nick Castellanos fans who listen to this podcast. I'm never particularly nice about him, and I don't mean to be mean.
I mean, I kind of like Nick, actually. I'm pretty confident that the bat is going to get better. I don't know if he's going to be able to really play, right field and be okay out there, but I kind of still think he might be. I mean, he's gotten faster the past 2 years, which I'm kind of banking on. And if there's one thing, that I want to bring up on Nick Castellanos' behalf, it's that when James McCann got into the scrum with Miguel Sano last year, first dude to him was Nick Castellanos right into the scrum. And the same thing when Miguel Cabrera punched Austin Romine, Nick Castellanos, first guy on the scene, diving in there. And that's a good teammate. I like to see
Yeah.
that.
Well, I still remember his the immediate reaction to that JD Martinez Chris Sale home run with old Nick Castellanos on the top step going, "Are you effing kidding me?"
Oh yeah.
It was one of the best things I've ever
Oh,
seen.
that was such a glorious moment. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
Yeah,
so
so I mean, like,
I'm gonna try
yeah,
to hang
he's
in there with
as
him.
a character and as a player, I have no problems with him as an individual. I would just dearly love for him. This is my 80-year-old grandma in me talking. I would dearly love for him to do up those buttons on his jersey. Just a little bit, Nick. Like, I know you're from Miami, but could we maybe just try buttoning those up?
He's got to flash that
And then
gold.
maybe,
Got to flash that gold, Ashley.
I don't know, man. I am secretly a grandmother at 34, but yeah, he's ridiculous.
Yeah, but in his own way, fairly likable. I mean, I think,
Absolutely, yes.
it's just the problem of, having seen too many ground balls, rocket past him while he flails in the dirt. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to for almost everybody, yeah. Tough to
Yes,
watch.
you're not wrong.
Yeah. So, Leonis Martin, I mean, I kind of when, we didn't have a center fielder to begin the season and we were playing Tyler Collins out there, I really thought, hey, this is worth a try. He's a great defender. He's still got the speed. He can still steal you bags. But the problem is, his bat was never very good, and it's just gone completely to hell the past few years. He doesn't
Oh, it was real bad this year. Like, real bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that he strikes out so much. He doesn't, but he doesn't really walk, and he's just so weak with the contact that just, nothing drops in for him. I think he hit, was it, I'm looking, once 172.
172?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and that's a short season, but even last year it was, 247, 306, 378 slash line. If you can play great defense, that would be okay. So I suppose we can be optimistic that maybe he comes out and gets off to a hot start and they can do something with him, but at least we'll have somebody out there in center field who can run
Yeah,
everything
his
down.
defense is it's good. Like, I looked at it, I think he had like a DRS of 8 last season, which is still pretty solid, and his UZR wasn't amazing, but it wasn't like negative, so
Yeah. And
it
that was only
definitely puts
in,
him
he only played like 50 games.
56 games or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. That's a pretty good defensive run saved. Only be out there for, not even a quarter of a season, not even close. So yeah, he can still go get it. And I've been kind of on this because, I just want the Tigers to do everything they can in terms of run prevention so that, in terms of having better defense, in terms of having better catching, and try to get Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd, some of these young pitchers, all the help they can to succeed. And, Martin might be a piece in that direction. Unfortunately, the Tigers signed someone else today who could potentially be a helpful piece because he's a much better framer than James McCann. But there are many reasons to be unhappy about the Tigers signing Derek Norris. And, his performance aside, the main reason is the domestic violence issue. He was, he got in trouble with the league this year. He hasn't been, there's no criminal charges, I don't think, were filed or anything like that. But it's just
no arrest, but it's part of an ongoing concern within the MLB. And I'm not particularly thrilled with that signing.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people are. I don't want to excuse any of the other players, but I think you can almost see why a team can justify it to themselves with a guy like Aroldis Chapman.
Sure.
Like, which is, again, not to excuse anything Chapman did, because it was not good at all. But to make an exception to sign a guy like Derek Norris, like, what plus does Derek Norris bring to the Tigers with his, 203 batting average?
Yeah.
I just don't see it. I mean, yes, he was an all-star in 2014, but, I mean, Alex Avila was an all-star in 2011. Let's get him back.
Yeah, I would much prefer that going that route. It's tough when something like that, is in a guy's, very recent history, especially, his history whenever. It's a touchy subject, but the it just comes down to, I don't want to be cold about it, but you also look at the reality of him on the Tigers and what does he bring to the table. And the guy only hits left-handed pitching, just like James McCann does. Yes, he's probably a better defensive catcher. He's a better framer. He's got experience. He's not a guy that you're going to, get anything out of. He's not a guy who's going to suddenly come back and play reasonably well and you're going to be able to move him or something like that for a piece. There's none of that. So I was really, surprised, that they did that. I was kind of like, that Derek Norris when I saw that, but.
There's no upside to that signing as far as I can tell. So, I mean, people can come at me and say all they want that I'm sure the Tigers looked into it. And I'm like, well, I mean, did they, not even just because of his past, but why make that signing at all? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just from the cold calculus of a PR perspective, there just doesn't seem to be enough there to balance the bad, that comes along with him. So,
and funny that you bring up PR. For a team that's going to struggle as much as the Tigers are next year, I think, to get fans into the stadium, and a team that's going to be looking really hard at how to motivate people to come out to those games. Why would you take a risk like that and say to yourself, yeah, let's sign a guy that was suspended for over a month at the end of last season and had to pay a fine, and that money had to go to domestic violence charities? Why sign that guy? Why make that decision?
Yeah. And who's, is it his girlfriend or his wife?
But it was ex-fiance.
Yeah. But I mean, she had a pretty harrowing tale to tell. It was pretty upsetting to read that. He's not on the team. He's invited to spring training. Maybe they'll check him out. Maybe they'll just, kind of let him, do his thing and, see if he's got anything left to offer. And probably he doesn't, and probably he's not going to end up on the roster this year, but we don't know that for a fact. And yeah, it just doesn't seem like the kind of move that has enough upside to make it worth it. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, the nice thing is that they brought Jim Adducci back. That was actually announced, I think, about a week ago, but that'll be kind of fun. It's Adducci's a guy who's, not going to play in the majors a whole lot, but, it was kind of a nice story.
He's Canadian.
I mean, he's got that going for him right off the bat.
So. It's very nice. There's not a lot of them going around, so I am a fan when we sign some of them.
Yeah. Bring back one of your countrymen. He was kind of a fan favorite last year. A lot of people were, pretty into the Deuce there for a little while, and, having him in the minor leagues, to kind of be a role model and maybe come up at a certain point and, kind of pitch in one of the corner outfield spots or whatever. That's fine. I don't have any real issue with it.
I don't see him getting used a lot, but if he does come up, he's a fine addition. Like he's the quiet but reliable kind of fill in the outfields last season. The one I'm kind of into and interested in is this Edwin Espinel kid, who was in the Tiger, not in the Tigers, but he was in the Pirates system.
Oh, yeah.
He was the Rawlings Minor League Gold Glove Award winner this year. And in the minors was hitting at about 279, which isn't, terribly exciting, but he did not commit a single error at first base this year, which is very interesting to me. I don't know. I mean, he's 23, he's a baby, he's in double A, triple A, and you can't put a lot of stock into that, but I'm interested.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those odd ones though, where it's, they pick up a first baseman. It kind of feels like, having Efrain Navarro around again, in that, presumably Miguel Cabrera will miss some time this year just because he's at the point in his career where, he's probably gonna have a few little disabled list stints, even if the best case scenario happens and he comes back with his back healthy and, is just absolutely murdering the baseball. You might need someone, in the minors who can come up and fill in for you there and maybe hit a little bit. So, yeah, I've got no real issue with it. It doesn't, it's another move that doesn't really seem like it has a whole lot of upside, but that's kind of where we're at
No,
in general. So, yeah.
I think in this season you're gonna see most likely you're gonna see a lot more use of Jim Hicks. Not Jim Hicks,
Oh,
John
yeah.
Hicks, John
John
Hicks.
Hicks, yeah.
We're just talking about Jim Adutti, so I'm like, yeah, Jim. Let's call everybody Jim.
They actually did kind
But
of mix together in my head there for a little while because
they
they came up at the
really
same time.
did.
The
They're both so
left-handed one.
generic. But Hicks was pretty decent working both as a backup catcher and at that first base role. Because I think if the Tigers are smart, what they'll do is avoid overusing Miggy at this point, and they'll also try to avoid overusing Victor, especially with the ongoing heart concerns. So I think you could see a little bit more of Miggy in that DH position and using guys like Hicks at first base in situations.
Yeah, I could see that happening, and you just don't know. Even if Victor Martinez, is back and healthy as far as the heart goes, he's still one wrong step from, tweaking the knees or, it's pretty hard to imagine he goes through a whole season without hitting the DL at some
He
point.
is held together by wishes and bubble gum at this point. Like, I'm amazed that Victor Martinez can still make it around the bases.
Yep, and he can, but woo, slowly, very slowly.
I think seeing more of him, of like a mix of Miggy and Victor in the DH position this year would make a lot of sense.
Yep, I could see that happening, and that brought the roster, the signing of Martin on a minor league or a major league contract brought the 40-man roster to 39 because they had already cut someone earlier in the week, who was Bruce Rondon, who finally ran out of chances with the Tigers and is now available for anyone who wants to try him as a project while the Tigers look for other projects to attempt. And
Yeah, good luck. Good luck to anybody. I have no sad feelings about that parting whatsoever.
Yeah,
I think it was time. I think the Bruce Rondon experiment had run its course.
yep, I have to agree. I mean, he was out of options, and I assume that was kind of the final step. The Tigers apparently had been trying to shop him for just, kind of a meager prospect, or some kind of exchange of, project reliever type guys, and no one was biting on that, which pretty much tells you what you need to know about Bruce Rondon's, kind of reputation, and people's interest level at this point. I defended Bruce Rondon, going into last year and still wanted them to give him one more shot at it. There's been a lot of, sometimes it does get overblown as far as like what a problem child a guy is. If anything gets out to the media, of course, it does kind of get harped on as one of the few things you actually know about a guy who doesn't really have like a major role on the team. But Rondon, last year in 2016, came down the stretch, throwing a great slider and showing some of the best command, we'd ever really seen out of him, at least since 2013. Pitched really well, and then came into camp this year, reportedly at 300 pounds, looked out of shape, and just never had anything to offer this season. And you look at the fastball, he's down a couple ticks from where he was when back in the, heir apparent to the closer role days of, the 2012, 2013 offseason. It's just not the same pitch that it was back then. And while the slider's good, he's never gotten anywhere with his command. You continue to hear like these, discipline problems. There's just not any real reason to stick in there. I know some people were upset. I was surprised, but a few people were upset about that. But there's just plenty of guys like that. There's a guy, Albert Tirado, who was also released along with Mark Appel by the Phillies, who, throws 99, 100, has a wicked slider, and can't hit the broadside of a barn. We could pick that guy up. There's plenty of guys like that around. So no tears need to be shed over Bruce Rondon. I'm not mad
Get
at
our
him.
own Nuke-Lelouch.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
We don't have to be mad at
God.
him to be like totally like, not interested. It's time to
Yeah,
move on.
I harbor no ill will, but it didn't seem even like he really particularly wanted to be on the team. Like you didn't get that motivation. You didn't get that vibe. Like he was actually, trying.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm still looking forward to seeing what Jimenez can bring. I don't think we got there last year, and I'm really hoping to see a little bit more of that World Baseball Classic magic out of him.
Yep. I see Instagram videos from Joe Jimenez, almost every day of him pumping tons of iron, always in the gym, always inspirational quotes. He seems to be a highly motivated individual. I've heard the same thing from people who know him, and yeah, he was probably brought up a little bit too early last year, and I can't complain about that because I was like, "Hey, why don't you bring him up?" Because we
Oh,
just didn't
we
have a whole
all
lot.
were.
Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot else to offer in the bullpen beyond Green and, Alex Wilson and Justin Wilson, especially when K-Rod was falling apart. So it was worth a
Yeah.
shot. But yeah, he was probably maybe a little bit too soon for him. And there's some other guys, Jairo Laborde, Zach Reininger. Brian Garcia didn't make it up last year, but he was closing at Toledo by the end of the year. So there's a bunch of interesting relief prospects who are at least, close and should be at least somewhat interesting to watch and see if one of them can develop into a legit reliever at some point along the way here.
I think it'll be I still have a feeling that the Tigers might try to move Green because he's one of the few pieces in the bullpen that has any real value and is like movable. Man, how much is that bullpen going to stink if you get rid of Green?
I know.
Oh,
I know.
God.
I mean, I guess at that point, you pretty much do just install, Jimenez at closer. You've got Laborde, Reininger, and maybe Garcia setting him up, and Alex Wilson is kind of your middle innings, just pitch him till he drops guy who fits in the middle. So yeah, it'll be rough then. And that, and that's another kind of issue the Tigers have is that they can't just roll out a ton of guys who are that bad because someone has to get these innings. And if, you're getting blown up left and right, you can't get your starters out early. You're going to end up overworking them. So as much as it kind of feels like, yeah, we can just, it doesn't matter. We can just pitch whoever. They do have to figure out a way to, to find some consistency in there, or they're going to end up using guys in ways they don't want to. They're going to be forced to do that, and that's not good for player development either. So they've got a tough call there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think they'll probably try to pick at least one reliever up on the free agent market. But it's not going to be anyone great. Like I don't suspect we're going to run out and get Greg Holland or anything.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's the problem is, you could see like if they could get somebody on a 1-year deal and just pay him a ton of money, like, hey, Brendan Morrow, do you want to come here for $20 million for 1 year? Like maybe you could
It's all
maneuver
the
someone
money we
there.
have.
Yeah, exactly. We do. And, we promise we'll trade you. But yeah, they're going to have to pick from a lesser class of free agent there. But one thing I would like to mention is that, I really hope the Tigers can make this pitch to whichever free agents, they're interested in, and that the Tigers are a better team to go to than any of these sort of kind of mid-tier teams that maybe could contend. Outside of like the Astros, the Dodgers, the Cubs, Yankees, the big boys, the Tigers are the direct path, to getting you to a contending team at the trade deadline because they'll trade you. And you could
Yeah.
sign on with, you could sign on with the Mets if you want to. You can sign on with the Rangers, but you're stuck with that team, all year. And what if they're, around 500 and you're into July and you're thinking like, we're not going to make it. If you're with the Tigers, you know, the Tigers are going to trade you to a team that is pretty convinced they're contending. So, you know, there is kind of a, you know, there is kind of a benefit to not, you know, just signing on with, you know, the Pirates or somebody who looks like they're going to be, you know, roughly 500. You know, if you want to get to the top, you know, maybe the best way is to just start at the bottom if you're not one of the premier Greg Holland, Wade Davis, you know, Morrow type reliever guys who are available. So,
Yeah, I like it. It's, you know what? It's a goofy sentiment, but you're actually right because based on what we did last year, it's exactly what'll happen. And I think it's almost why some people think Avila might come back because it's like, well, if you don't find the deal you want right away, just come back to the Tigers and we'll trade you in July.
yeah, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, teams pay a premium price at the deadline, and it's because they're close enough to know kind of what their chances are. You know, in the spring they don't, but at that point, you know, they have a pretty good idea. And you know, yeah, you can sign on with, you know, the Nationals if you want to. That's a good bet. But you know, even a team like that, you know, yeah, okay, you signed on with the Nationals, but what if, you know, Steven Strasburg blows out his elbow or, you know, something major happens? Then you're stuck. You know, you've locked in with them for the whole year. Whereas, yeah, you know, come to Detroit, you know, they won't overwork you too hard because the whole point is eventually, you know, we're going to try to turn you into a prospect. So, all you free agents out there, you know,
Exactly.
keep that in mind. Detroit is not a bad place to play.
They may have a bad future ahead of them, but whoever signs there
Yeah,
won't.
exactly. It's not a bad place to play for 3.5, 4 months, let's say. Plus, you know, Ron
Yeah.
Gardenhire, you got, you know, Snow White beard, you know, Santa looking fella taking care of you. Yeah, this
Oh
is.
my God.
I know, we're in such a weird place. We really are. We have to plumb the depths for sources of intrigue and interest out here.
It's the calm before the storm, I hope.
Yep, so do I. They sign, you know, and Al Avila in general has basically done the right things this offseason. You know, he's trying to find cheap guys with some upside. I was really happy that they picked up Ryan Carpenter. They signed him on a major league deal, but he was a minor league free agent who I think pitched for the Rockies in their farm system last year and was pretty good. He's a big, tall lefty who kind of looks a lot like Andrew Miller or Madison Bumgarner. Kind of has that long levered delivery, but isn't, you know, doesn't nearly have that kind of stuff. But you know, he's kind of got like four kind of fringe average pitches, and if his command is good, he could be useful. They also signed Kevin Comer, who's a pretty hard thrower who the Astros had to release. You know, they picked up some of the better minor league free agent guys that were out there, and you know, you never know. A lot of times those guys, you know, you're kind of scraping the barrel when you're going for minor league free agents because their team could have protected them on their 40 man and decided not to, which tells you something.
Yeah.
But you know, out of that pool, I think the Tigers did pretty well to get some of the best guys that were available. So you never know, maybe one of those guys will prove useful.
That's all you can hope, right? It's just wait and hope.
Yep, it really is. Yeah, it's just yeah, it's hard to acclimate them, you know. I switched over really like in the middle of last year because I was doing most of the minor league coverage on the site, or at least a lot of it. And at a certain point, I realized like, oh, this is good. I'm much happier to already be ahead of the game and just moving on to just full time covering the farm system and all that sort of thing. Because
Yeah.
yeah, it was just such a rough watch down the stretch.
Oh God. Yeah. It's I think I'm almost relieved knowing how bad the team will be next year because it gives you that nice like lowered expectations vibe where you're just like it'll be like, "Oh, they did a thing. Good job, Tigers."
Yep. You don't have to kind of trick
So
yourself or talk yourself into like, oh, maybe this team can contend if Daniel Norris, you know, gets it together and Matt Boyd gets it together
yeah.
and Miggy is healthy and all these sort of ifs you have to pile onto each other. You know, they did the right thing last year and ripped the Band-Aid off, and you know, we're just all gonna have to bleed for a year or two until hopefully shiny, fresh new skin grows over the wound. I
Yeah.
just I'm on a trend because last week I was already mentioning the sharks and, you know, us picking through the leftover bits of flesh. And yeah, the metaphors are just going to get darker and darker, people. So I hope you hope you can ride along with me on this.
Nice and gross. That's good.
Yeah.
Just scare them off with scab talk.
Yep. So, all right. So what we've got coming up is finally the winter meetings, and you know, that's going to start this weekend. Maybe the first thing that will go on that's interesting to Tiger fans is that the modern era ballot will finally come out with their two picks for who will make the Hall of Fame. A lot of people are pretty pretty high on Alan Trammell's chances finally. I tend to think that Alan Trammell is finally going to get into the Hall of Fame this weekend, and that at least will be something to celebrate.
Yes, I agree. What do you
Now,
think about Jack Morris?
I don't quite think Jack Morris is really a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't be offended if Jack Morris gets in, that's for sure, but he's just that guy that I can't really, I've never been able to convince myself is like a slam dunk, like this guy should be in. I can do that with Alan Trammell, can do that with Lou Whitaker. I can probably do that with
Yeah,
Louis Tiant as
the
well, who might get in, but I can't quite do it with Morris.
Yeah, that Whitaker's not on the ballot just makes me mad every time I'm reminded.
I love Alan Trammell's loyalty though too, because he's said on numerous occasions like he'd be happy to get in, but he really doesn't want to get in without Lou. And that just yeah,
Well,
after all these years,
they're a
that's pretty great.
team, right? Like it's you can't have one without the other. It's peanut butter and jelly.
Yep, and and it just speaks to what a stand-up individual Alan Trammell is. Everything I hear about that guy even now is just he's just a world-class human being who doesn't really care too much, for any new accolades, but would be happy to get in, but is mostly just dead focused on, training up the young guys, coaching and helping the other guys live the dream. So, God bless you, Alan Trammell. You were my hero when I was a
Yeah.
kid, so yeah.
Aww.
So I'll be pretty happy. Yeah, I'm a child of 84 really, 'cause I was 10 in 1984 and a little league shortstop slash pitcher. And so Alan Trammell, yeah,
Oh.
that was definitely my guy. I mean, he and Morris both were my two heroes. Lance Parrish pretty high up in that regard as well. So yeah, I'll be pretty stoked to see Trammell get in there, even though Justin Verlander has overtaken him as my favorite all-time Tiger.
Those are some solid picks, Brandon. I can't
Well,
argue with any of those.
I know. I mean, there's such A-list picks too. I can't really. There's no indie cred involved at all. Like going to the exact, the top of the barrel there, the cream of the crop.
It's not like you're like, yeah, I'm a total Chet Lemon guy or some like
Yeah.
you're like, I'm not, I'm a Nick Logan fan,
Yeah.
like
Let me tell you something. Barbaro Garbay could have been something if, the Tigers would have played him more. Sparky, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Not going there. So yeah, we won't do that. We won't go down the Barbaro Garbay rabbit hole. But the other things that, I mean, the winter meetings, we'll have the Rule 5 draft. The Tigers will have the number one pick, and Bless Your Boys will have coverage, kind of coming up shortly here on who the top guys are, who are available in the Rule 5 draft. Guys like Nick Birdie, who a lot of people are interested in, who is a pretty slick pitching prospect, who's I think going to miss all of next year with Tommy John surgery, but might be another candidate to stash and kind of wait on. I wrote about another guy who we could do that with, who was Drew Smyly. Do you have any interest in Drew Smyly coming back?
I would love to see Drew Smyly come back because he fits. I will not shut up about this until they actually do something about it. He fits my theory that we should bring back somebody people give a crap about. And I think Smyly was, because we got to see Smyly come up from the minors. Like I remember him making his debut, and it was very cool to watch. And I mean, yes, he was part of that huge price trade with the Rays, which was awesome. But I think it would be nice to see him come back. He never really did much terribly exciting with the Rays or the Mariners, but I want to see
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder, like 2014 when we actually or
it.
when we traded him was kind of about his peak. Like he pitched pretty well for the Rays the next season, and then 2016 still, like looked good as far as like strikeouts and walks, but just started giving up home runs left and right, which kind of coincided with everyone in the league starting to give up home runs left and right. But he had it worse than most, so it could have been that Seattle
But I
would have been a
mean,
good fit for him, but that's not a park you can hit the ball out of very easily. But he never got a chance, went down with forearm trouble and then had Tommy John surgery in early July, and so he'll be out all next year. But I just think, yeah, you give him a 2-year deal, maybe even a really cheap 3-year deal if he wanted it, and stash him aside, let him work out with the team, and then see if he can kind of work his way up, at the late next season when he comes back. And then if he does, we might have a reasonably good starting pitcher the year after. It's only 28.
yeah, I like it. I think it's not like I wanted Pfister, but I'd be down for the return of Drew Smyly. I think at this point the Tigers would be stupid not to try things, right? Like to make those like calculated risks. And I think that it's an interesting one, and I don't see the harm in it, is the thing. Like, why not?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I mean, I think that's how a lot of us feel is just, I want them to try something new. I want them to take some chances on some guys. I mean, Drew Smiley, you can basically, sign and, stash on the 60-day disabled list, and you still have a roster spot that you could use if you wanted to. You're basically
Yeah.
just, picking up a free roster spot basically to put a pretty good starting pitcher on. And I know, so, when Drew Smiley was traded, he was a little bit salty about being traded. And some people are kind of on him about that. I don't care about that in the slightest. Like, a guy who's happy about being traded away from a team that, in 2014 looked like we were, at least going to contend for something, and did make the playoffs. I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem with him being a little bit annoyed at Dombrowski. These guys are human. It's no different than getting, traded to another company if that could happen to you. You're not going to be
Yeah.
thrilled to have, your own kind of agency taken away from you and be sent somewhere.
No, and I think it's the opposite issue that people had with Fielder, because Fielder was like, "Well, we lost. Peace out, guys. I don't care. I have a family." And now we're getting mad at Smiley for being like, "No, I would have liked to have stayed on that team that looked like they might contend."
Yep.
Like, pick one or the other. Do you want people to not care, or do you want them to care? Like, I
Yeah.
don't know.
People just want reason to be angry. I guess is what it really comes down to. When I think
Like,
of Drew
I,
Smiley,
we.
what I think of is 2012 when, this kid who no one expected to be anything puts it together at AAA and suddenly he's, basically closing for us in the postseason when Valverde blew up and was just nails. And I was just like, oh. From that point on, I was on board, and he did everything the Tigers wanted. He pitched in the bullpen, even though that wasn't what he wanted to do. He finally got his starting job in 2014, and then they traded him away. And I have no problem with Drew Smiley. I actually like him quite a bit. I think he's pretty gritty. And I watched him in the WBC, which the other thing we talked a lot about the overall look at the season, last week. But I think back to the WBC, and that was some of the best baseball I saw this whole year. And Drew
Oh, it was
Smiley
so
was
good.
nails in his performance. I mean, he struck out eight. He was throwing harder than I'd ever seen him. I really thought he was up for a good year. So, I
Yeah.
won't be upset if the Tigers don't bring him back. Like, I get it. But yeah, it would be nice to see them try something a little more unique here and, yeah, possibly, bring back someone whose name people are at least familiar with. I think at this
Yeah,
point there's
because
a little
like
value, like you say, yeah.
there's not, and like the guys that I was thinking that would be the obvious targets are kind of out now with the Martin signing. Like, you're not going to bring back a Grandier and Austin Jackson because you've got Martin out in center field now. So there would be absolutely no point in bringing another center fielder into the mix. We're lousy with center fielders. We don't need any more. None of them are very good, but
Yeah. If we could get
we have a
Lorenzo
lot of
Cain,
them.
that would be a different story, but we're not getting Lorenzo Cain. So.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to go out and trade for Kevin Kiermaier. Like, it's not how things happen. So, like, I think picking up a pitcher that people know is probably your next best bet, because there's not a lot of options out there unless we go out and get a Fernando Rodney. Which, I mean, I said we might go pick up a relief arm, so who knows?
Yeah,
But yeah,
Fernando wouldn't be
we'll.
the worst move. Yeah, I mean, Fernando's a guy who could come out and pitch well for a while early in the year and be dealt for something. That's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, I don't think that it's an out of the realm of possibility choice for them to bring Fernando Rodney back. I will just be outraged all season that he cannot put his hat on straight.
Yeah, you won't be alone in that too.
Oh, it makes me so mad, Brandon. He's like found exactly the level of tilt acceptable to not be against uniform regulations and just lives there.
I know, but the thing about that, I just I don't know if that whole story about it being a tribute to the way his dad wore his hat is 100% true, or if that's just something he says to put people off. I honestly don't know, but ever since he said that, I've just been like, ah, whatever. I just don't care. Not an issue for
Yeah.
me. I know I kind of put it with everybody who in Detroit, was always dogging Matt Stafford, the Lions quarterback, for wearing his hat backward. Like, oh, this is unprofessional. Like, ah, who cares? If he can play, he can play, I mean, I don't think we need to concern ourselves too much with this. Yeah.
Well. Yeah, I'll
So,
get over it if we sign him.
yeah, I mean, at least maybe it'll, well, I don't know. Maybe it won't mean that Green won't get traded till middle of the way. Maybe they'll trade Green and all of a sudden Fernando Rodney is our closer and we're in
Oh,
some kind of bizarro 2007 situation.
Oh, don't
Yeah.
say that.
I know. I'm just full of doom and gloom right now. I can't help it.
You are, but the problem is that any doom and gloom scenario that we bring up is entirely plausible at this point. Like, I think I joked the other day that maybe we should give Phil Koch an invite because he's just been playing in Japan. And I'm like, well, he's been a starting pitcher in Japan, Brandon. Like, if we want to have a six-man rotation, why don't we bring Phil Koch back and give him a go
Sure,
at
sure.
the sixth starter role? Like, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. No, we didn't get Shohei Ohtani, but hey, look, guys, Phil Koch. Phil Koch is back with the glove slams and the finger
We
pointing.
got this other very exciting Japanese player.
Oh, Tiger fans, I'm so sorry. All my heart goes
I would,
out to you
you know
poor
what?
guys.
I would secretly love it if we brought Phil Koch back.
I actually wouldn't care. Yeah, I'd be like, whatever.
It would delight me to no end.
Yeah, Phil Koch is a fun guy. I'll give him that. He was fun to have around. I never understood why the Tigers, continued to think he was a starter when they did. I mean, I don't even want to revisit the whole Phil Koch situation. Let's just say he was on the mound in 2012 when they beat the Yankees in the ALCS, and that's good enough for all of
Yes, that was delightful.
Yeah. So, all right, we're gonna transition here a little bit and just kind of dial in on the front office and the coaching staff. A lot has changed for the Tigers since the end of the season. Brad Ausmus basically was fired at the beginning of September and just kind of hung around with the boys until the season ended. And we've signed, obviously, Ron Gardenhire to be the new manager. But I wanted to start with Al Avila because one of my favorite baseball writers, Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs, is doing something he does every year where he basically takes a huge poll as to how teams or how fans feel about their team's front office. And I wanted to take a look and see where the Tigers fans have voted their front office thus far. It can't be good.
Oh my God.
Let's
I
see.
can't wait.
Let's see what he's got. Okay. There's five
Is it
options.
27?
Well, it's very good, pretty good, average, very bad, and pretty bad. Well, pretty bad and then very bad is the worst. And right now, pretty bad is leading the way by a substantial margin at 43.89%, with average coming in second, which surprises me a little bit, at 30%, and very bad at 18%. There are only 5.5% who say pretty good and 1% who says very good. So, I think that's all reasonably accurate at this point. I think that's a pretty reasonable assessment of how Al Avila's done so far. But I guess the way I would want to frame it is, I mean, it's very hard because they fired Dave Dombrowski and basically kept most of the rest of the front office. But how much blame would you personally put on Al Avila for where the Tigers are now as compared to Dave Dombrowski?
Like,
There's an easy question for you.
it easy? I don't think that's an easy question at
No,
all.
I don't at all. That was sarcasm from me. It's
Like,
really difficult to kind of tease apart who's responsible for what.
it's so hard because you look at those contracts with guys like Martinez and Miggy and those like just burdensome deals, and that's not on Al. Like, that's not Al Avila's fault that we have this, these guys that you can't move. Although I would say that Martinez is more Mike Ilitch's fault than Dave Dombrowski's fault,
Yeah.
because I think Martinez went right to Ilitch on that and was just like, I'd really like to stay, Mike. And Mike Ilitch was like, we'll make something work,
Right.
Victor,
We'll take
but
care of
like,
you. We'll take care of you, Victor, I believe is what was said. Yeah.
So I mean, you can't put all the blame for the situation that the Tigers find themselves in on Al. And I as much as I hate to say it, I think you can pin a lot of it on Mike Ilitch, because he rode this very win now motivation for a very long time. And I think the Tigers as an organization really did want to win that World Series ring for Mike. And I think it put them in a position where they spent a lot of their time and money focusing on now, as opposed to preparing for the future, very much like, the grasshopper and the whoever like planned for winter. But like, they had nothing planned for the future because they spent all their time focusing on winning now. And now that opening window has closed, they're like, oh, well, crap, didn't plan for the long winter ahead. And Al finds himself in a very unfortunate position of having to make up for all those years where it was the plenty of the moment as opposed to savings for the future, And it's not an enviable position for a guy to be in because he was with Dombrowski through all those years and got to see the build, and now all of a sudden it's in his hands to make sure that the Tigers have winning for the future. And I don't know, it's an unenviable position, and I don't think I can hold him responsible for where he finds himself.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. You go back through, the Mike Ilitch years, especially, the later years, and, I know Al Avila, had at least a decent amount of responsibility for a lot of things that went well, as far as like some of the trades the Tigers made for pitchers. There was, finding JD Martinez. I mean, that's an Al Avila contact. So, you have to give him some credit for, just how good the Tigers were along that way. And you can't just turn around and say like, well, Dave Dombrowski was responsible for everything good, Al Avila is responsible for everything bad, just because of the way, the hiring and firing there went. But, Al Avila has taken this on, and that's the way it goes. But I was thinking earlier, and I was thinking about this all day, actually, was about Mike Ilitch myself, and just about how good an owner really was Mike Ilitch. Because I think
Oh, yeah.
because of the amount he spent, the last, 5 or 6 years especially, it's easy to kind of to forget, the first, 8, 9 years of his ownership and all the things that went wrong there, and how he just let the front office just screw up, endlessly with no repercussions, and the Tigers didn't spend, and the Tigers didn't sign anybody. And it was really like, it was 2004, 2005 when it was like he finally like woke up to the Tigers and decided like, okay, I've been focused on the Red Wings. Here we go. And, I think people, kind of write that all off and want to, and want to look at him like he was, one of the all-time great owners or something, or one of the most committed. I really do. He was definitely committed, in the later years, and I do appreciate an owner that spends and really wants to win. But there was also, some of the meddling that went on with moves, where he probably should have listened to his front office more so than, his desire to kind of, populate the team with big time free agents and stars, and tried to create something that was a little bit more, sustainable, along the Cardinals model, where they're always like reasonably good, rarely great, but always, maybe a move or two during the season from, being a World Series contender. And that's a really hard niche to fit into. So yeah, for me, Al Avila's, the really bad things I can put on Al Avila are, the Alfredo Simon, or not the Alfredo Simon, but the Mike Pelfrey signing, Mark Lowe, some of those deals. And there's definitely some criticism to go there, but it also comes back to the fact that, Mike Ilitch wanted to win then. And after the 2015 season, they probably should have just chilled out, maybe signed a starting pitcher, and then just seen how the season went. But they went all in again. They didn't have the farm to do anything, and so here we are. Here we find ourselves, at a point where they really didn't have a whole lot of options but to make the deals that they did. And the question now is, what kind of owner is Chris Ilitch going to be? Because if the Tigers, wanted to, it's interesting to think about who the Tigers could trade for. The Tigers could trade for Chris Archer. Tigers could trade for all kinds of, really good players with a few years of control left, and they could also sign, plenty of good players if they wanted to. Now, that would probably be foolish because we've tried it a whole bunch of different ways and it hasn't worked out, and it feels like, we need to build up a much stronger young core, and I think the Tigers are going in the right direction in terms of doing that. But it's just difficult to know how much of a pass to give, Chris Ilitch, or how much time to give them. And I'm really in the back of my mind afraid that, Chris Ilitch is kind of just going to let Al Avila just run the show for, 5 or 6 years before he really, takes any kind of decisive action or gets involved, and we don't even know if him getting involved would be a good thing. So we're in kind of a tough spot.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Part of me still wonders if like the payroll shedding is more to make it an appealing team to sell. And I, it's hard to say, right? Ilitch has said that he's dedicated to the team and he's seen what his dad did with the team. But I think it's really going to be one of those things where you can only tell in a couple years when we see how it really all shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the truth. You know, I don't really have any option but to kind of take him, you know, at face value and assume that he's as interested as he says he is and that he's going to try to continue his dad's legacy and, you know, do everything he can to bring a championship here. But, you know, if you're going to do everything you want to do to bring a championship here, they could, you know, they could be signing a couple free agents and not, you know, not trading away the farm and just keep building the farm up. And we'd see, you know, kind of where things go then. But yeah, it's really hard to gauge what Chris Illich is going to do, and that makes it hard to know what Al Avila, you know, actually has available to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, my hope is that, you know, Al Avila is going to be more creative than we've seen so far. You know, they've built the analytics department. It's still not, you know, fully operational, probably in terms of, like, you know, the way like the Astros or the Dodgers are, where it's actually impacting player development at the major league level. It seems like the Tigers are still at the, you know, kind of nascent stage of, you know, just using it to evaluate trades, draft picks, you know, things like that, which is fine. Free agent signings, which is fine, but, you know, there's still a ways from getting there and having that ramped up. And meanwhile, the rest of the league is kind of moving ahead. So yeah, it's just tough to know how long this project is going to take and whether or not they can catch up. And I just have just an awful sense about Al Avila that he's just kind of too conservative a guy fundamentally to really ever be, you know, super progressive and kind of take this team into the kind of terrain where the Dodgers and the Astros are sort of leading the way and finding value and innovating in different places, the way Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and those guys did in Boston.
Yeah,
I need to see some signs, and, you know,
doing
something like,
I haven't seen them yet either.
No, I mean, they're starting to talk the talk, which helps, but, you know, we haven't really seen them, you know, kind of develop anybody, you know, uniquely. We haven't really seen them do anything creative as far as, you know, dealing some of their, you know, their prospects for maybe like, you know, a younger talent that, you know, a team might be looking to cast off, who are, you know, a team that already has somebody coming. And, you know, it's early. The Tigers just decided to rebuild, so we're probably just going to have to be patient and kind of see how it plays out. But there is one major move that I think, unfortunately for me at least, kind of speaks to my fears, and that is the hiring of Ron Gardenhire as the Tigers manager. How did you take that when you heard the news?
You know what? My honest-to-God immediate reaction was like, oh, it was just like a resounding meh. Like, I just, and here's like the thing is, I've been to so many Twins games because Target Field is my closest stadium. It's basically my home field. I like the Twins. I love that stadium. So I've known Gardy and his antics. You can't really call them antics because Gardy is antics free.
Yeah, I want to say his style, but I'm not sure he has style either.
I've seen Gardy for years, and he's a likable enough guy as a manager. And I worry so much because his last 4 years with the Twins were some of the worst seasons that team has had. And I don't know if that blame can fall entirely on him or because of a lack of substantial talent or what. But it's really hard to get psyched about a manager who managed to fail a team like the Twins. You know what I mean? So, and they say that with the Diamondbacks as their bench coach, he got more open-minded about the idea of analytics. But until I see that in action, I don't believe it either. And he's brought on so many of his guys, which I know is kind of par for the course with a managerial move like this. But it just doesn't leave me feeling real warm and fuzzy, about the prospects. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, you know, obviously, you know, I'd kind of push for Gabe Kapler knowing he wasn't going to come here, but, you know, but realistically, I just wanted someone who felt like they were a little bit more of a progressive kind of new school type thinker. And,
yeah,
you know, when I heard that they'd chosen Ron Gardenhire, it just felt like, I just felt like meh is a good term, but it just felt like, oh, this is, This is just a lukewarm, kind of bath I'm falling into. And, slowly I will fall asleep and the water will get warmer and warmer until I'm boiling and don't realize it. Like, this
Yeah,
is
well,
just
it's just
the most
so
comfortable
much
kind of
the
move.
op it's just so much the opposite of anything exciting and new, right? Like it is the warm milk before bed of managerial signings.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. Yeah, and it's not that I care about the small ball stuff. Sometimes if you have a certain team that, just isn't, kind of gifted with power, some small ball is good for you. I mean, that can still come in handy here and there. And I think Ryan Gardenhire is a good manager. It's not that I look at, the work he did with the Twins and think like, ah, he was terrible. I do think some people look at, kind of the late aughts teams that were making, kind of, I wouldn't say ruling the Central late in that decade, but were, consistently good teams who ran down the Tigers and vexed them on numerous occasions. Those teams had a lot of talent. Maybe not as much as, the Tigers teams of, 2012, 2013 did. I think that's pretty clear, but they were pretty talented. And, yeah, he's probably a sound guy. I know he's good with players. He's good with young players. None of those things, really concern me. And obviously the Tigers aren't going to win anything anyway. And that's where I hear people kind of being like, it doesn't matter that much. But what worries me, and this is what I keep going on about, and I know I'm a broken record on the site in numerous articles where I hit on this, but if your manager isn't the guy, pushing things forward in terms of, trying to use technology, trying to use more data to make players better, at the major league level, you're not doing everything you can to maximize their value in trade or to turn them into useful players. And I don't think it's a good idea to just kind of take it as like, well, he's good with young players and he said he likes analytics now. It's not enough to like it or to even understand it. You have to be, proactively, working with your analytics department. This is what you see from the Cubs, you see it from the Astros, the Dodgers. Every team as the Tigers would want to be like, you see the manager interacting with the player development personnel, the analytics department, and trying to, to use every bit of data and technology and information that they have to make their guys better, in the here and now. And I just feel like, if Gardy doesn't really have that going for him, we're going to have a couple years where, the analytics guys kind of do their thing and the coaching staff does their thing, and there still isn't this kind of synergy that you see when you read or hear from, yeah, the Cubs, Astros, Dodgers, etc. So we'll see. Maybe he'll surprise me, but it doesn't take a whole lot to get up there and just say like, oh yeah, Torry Lovello, introduced me to analytics and it opened up a whole new world for me.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like
Yeah.
it's.
Even the fact that he addressed it kind of, I mean, I know he was ass on some occasions, but on others he kind of just brought it up himself and it just felt like a kind of like a, a checkbox he knew he needed to tick. So then again, Clint Hurdle famously, was a pretty curmudgeonly set in his way type of manager and, realized at a certain point that he had to dive into this and became a total, total convert to using sabermetrics and technology and gathering data and using all that to kind of find edges everywhere. So it's not impossible. And we'll have to hope for the best and see what Gardy can do for us.
Yeah, it's really hard for us to judge right now without seeing any of it. There's definitely a level of cautious optimism.
Yeah, I at least feel like, he's going to be on his guys, to do things the right way in a way that I think it'll be different than Brad Ausmus. And I didn't think Brad Ausmus, some people, think a manager is going to be a hard ass and get on him and that's going to help. You don't hear that from anybody, just to address the general Tigers baseball public. You don't hear that from AJ Hinch. You don't hear that from Girardi. You don't hear that from Joe Maddon. They're not out there yelling and screaming at their guys and kicking butts. That stuff is just antiquated nonsense. Guys who are paid $10 million a year don't respond to that. You kind of have to, you have to schmooze them. You have to manage. And we'll see if Gardy on those fronts can kind of get something out of these guys. Yep.
Yeah,
So.
I do think that there's something to the idea of having like a literal old manager with such young guys that I think there's a benefit there almost because they may just take that guidance more seriously than with a younger manager like Kapler.
Yeah, there's at least a distance as far as like interests and kind of the generation that they're from. And sometimes that can kind of command a little bit of respect on its own. Really, I think I really think Brad Ausmus' problem as far as like a motivator is just that he's too dry, you know? He's just too dry, sarcastic, and in his own way, and this will make some people who hate him like just spit their drink, but Brad Ausmus is kind of a no BS type guy. You hear this stuff from Joe Maddon and some of these other managers, old hard, hard-nosed Tiger fan types would dismiss all that as touchy-feely nonsense. But those are the best managers in the game. And I feel like Brad Ausmus, isn't a guy who could get himself to, go give subtle motivational talks and a back rub to, a young player who's down on himself or has some trouble at home. That's the kind of
No,
thing
I
you hear out of the other
agree.
guys, but yeah. So, yeah, I don't
Yeah.
know. Yeah, Guardy being a little bit older and, kind of commanding some respect for having, 10 years plus as a manager and having, coached a lot of good guys, that could be a benefit to him. And we'll just have to see, if he's learned any new tricks or not.
We'll see. That's all you can do, right? Wait and see.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we might be about to wrap it up this week. The last thing that kind of hit the site this week that was kind of big is that it's interesting to think about Miguel Cabrera has been a Tiger now for 10 years. It was just 10 years ago the other day that we signed Miguel or traded for Miguel Cabrera. And boy, that's been fun. I mean, it just I tried to express it in the little piece I wrote about it really quickly, in like an hour lunch break at work. And it's just hard to put into words. You can look at Miguel Cabrera's numbers. You can see the home runs, but watching him hit, night after night, especially in his peak years, was just one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in baseball.
Oh, I hope to never forget watching him clinch the Triple Crown. Like we were out. I was with my boyfriend at the time, and we were out, and we legit left a place early so that we could get home to watch the end of that game in Kansas City to just see that moment happen. And it was worth it. It was an absolutely incredible moment.
It was. And, I'll always, kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for the Kansas City Royals fans who, like really did the stand up thing and gave him a pretty huge ovation. That was really cool. And Jim Leland, the old maestro that he is, knowing to substitute for him right then, get him his ovation and get him off the field. Yeah, it just all came together really perfectly. And, that was right in the peak of the Tigers kind of dominance there too. So it all just kind of came together and kind of just a really nice shining moment. But yeah, when I think about, Miguel Cabrera, I just think of a guy just crushing the ball, like just in a way that I've just never seen in person. I remember I think it was 2009. I saw 4 games in a row on a homestand at Comerica Park, and I swear he hit the ball like a rocket every single time. And he made a whole bunch of outs. He was smoking the ball at the first baseman, smoking balls at the third baseman, crushing them right at the center fielder. He hit a home run. I know there were a couple doubles and plenty of hits in there, but it was just the purity of contact he could make on any pitch, anywhere in the zone, and still can when he's healthy. That was just, yeah, just one of those things. Yeah, you just hard to express what it was like to see a guy do that and just how much it stood out from any other baseball player I've ever, kind of watched in person.
Yeah, it's neat. Like I know that in, 20 or 30 years, it'll be one of those things where if I ever have kids, I'll be like, I got to watch Miguel Cabrera pitch hit in his prime, and they'll be like, yeah, mom, we know, shut up. Like you've told us this story 1,000 times. And I'm like, Miguel Cabrera was the greatest hitter of all time. And I'll stand by it.
Yeah, and they'll be pointing to some genetically engineered monster on television, smashing 80 home runs while batting like 210 or something like that. Like,
Like
no, this guy.
this Stanton bought 5,000 will be like, no,
Yep, the Stanton bot is coming.
Oh.
I was just reading something the other day just to get into some more darkness about, some of the genetic manipulations they're starting to do on animals, and I just keep thinking like, people who are still really upset about the steroid era, I just have not been able to come to terms yet with what's coming down the pipe. We are
No.
not prepared for these kind of things, and I don't know what baseball is going to do when, guys are getting their genes modified to make their muscles grow faster or, heal faster. I don't know. You just know these things are going to start to happen. So, All right, I think we're gonna wrap it up for tonight. That was episode two. We kind of just wanted to get a few episodes under our belt. We're gonna start having some guests come around. Like I mentioned earlier, we're hoping to have David Larilla on next week, and we'll see you next week, hopefully from the winter meetings. Ashley, you have a good night.
You too.